You're listening to the Star Wars Report, episode 70. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Star Wars Report. I'm so glad that you've decided to join us on this particular morning, afternoon, or evening. Please delete as appropriate, because after all, this is a podcast. An hour of Star Wars talk with good friends. And we count you among them if you're listening to this show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host for this evening, Riley Blanton. And I'm very excited about tonight's episode. On this episode, we've got quite a few things to talk about, as I think will be the case for the next 2.5 years until Episode 7 comes out. We've got Episode 7 rumors. We're going to actually revisit... There's actually, in case people have forgotten, there's also this thing called the Clone Wars running on television right now. We're going to talk about that. We've also got official confirmations from Lucasfilms on some updates to Episode 7, some other really cool announcements. It's all coming up on Episode 70 of the Star Wars Report. I'm going to bring in our great guest panel and co-host, starting off with my good friend and yours, Mr. Mark Herleman.
Hey, hey!
Mark,
it's always
good, man,
to be here.
Yeah, thanks.
Whistler's here. I believe we have someone else that you might recognize from Star Wars Beyond the Films.
Uh-huh,
we could almost play this in two feeds tonight.
I know. Joining us also, it has been way too long since we've had him on, and I've wanted to talk to you about a lot of the goings-on in the Star Wars universe, Nathan. Yes, indeed. Nathan Patrick Butler of Star Wars Beyond the Films. Thanks for coming on, sir.
Hey, no problem. Good to be here, finally.
I know.
My illness enough to be able to speak without all that Walking Dead stuff.
Yeah, I know. I hope you can make it through the night, because I know you've not been feeling in the best of terms in health, but we do hope you certainly get feeling better. Conspicuous by her absence is Bethany. She's not here tonight, unfortunately. She will be here next week, as I understand. Not next week, because that kind of comes to our first announcement. There's this thing called Thanksgiving going on. So next Thursday... There's Whistler. I think that's a record for the time Whistler took to get on the show. We won't be here next week because that will be Thanksgiving, and Bethany and I will be on a sailboat somewhere in the Gulf of Mexico. So, yeah.
Gotta sail away. Gotta sail away. Sail away today.
Exactly. That's basically what we'll be doing. So, a lot of really cool stuff. Before we get into the meat of the episode, I want to run a couple announcements and some updates to you guys listening. Number one is you guys may have noticed conspicuous by their absence are the good folks at Toy Hut, who did a long time sponsorship and really helped this podcast get up off its feet. And times are tight, money's tight, and so they're not currently a sponsor, but we still have a really good relationship with those guys. Still the best place, if you ask me, to get some Star Wars toys from fellow Star Wars collectors. But we do have another way. I want to just quick mention we have an Amazon store that if you go to our website, you can actually click through and do an Amazon purchase if you so care, and it won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon's pretty cool and kicks us a little small percentage of that. And of course, now we're not in this for profit or anything like that. This anything that we any kind of small money that we might make goes basically straight into the website itself, because Bethany and I, we pay the hosting fees ourselves. All the hosts here put in their own time. We're all volunteers. But that's something that you guys can do, and I highly encourage you to. There's a nice little handy banner. We don't have the whole website plastered with ads. It's actually a cool handy link that you guys can go to StarWarsReport.com/support, and there you will find our Amazon store. Item number two that I'm actually probably more excited about is I finally got around, Mark. I've been saying I would do this for forever. But one of the most reliable ways to follow what we do on the Star Wars Report is actually via email. And I've never actually done it, but I've known this fact that one of the best ways, you know, to keep up with people is your email inbox. Because, you know, Twitter, if you follow 500 people, you often miss things. Same thing with Facebook with their new EdgeRank algorithm. Fan pages, like if you like us on Facebook.com/StarWarsReport, there's only a very small percentage of the people actually see the posts we put there, because the way Facebook systems works, unless you pay. unless you pay up, my friend. If you want to see your fans on Facebook, you're going to pay. We need an Italian accent.
Well, I think they could still go into the filters and go to the click down most recent, but I think you have to do that every single time, and most people are lazy.
Yeah, that's true. So that makes it kind of difficult, but so yes, we have a mailing list, and we have a mailing list and newsletter right now. We're going to do a lot of really cool stuff in the future, but right now it's a very, very simple process where you can go to StarWarsReport.com. Right at the right corner there, you can actually click on and just put your name and email in, and what you'll get currently is a really cool, nicely formatted. I'm working through with MailChimp, which is a client that's able to do this, and it takes right now. It aggregates all the RSS feeds into a very nice kind of beautiful layout, and it drops right in your email inbox with usually the most 4 or 5 recent articles on StarWarsReport.com. So you get blog posts, you get links to the podcast, and it's all there in a nice email format, right there in your email inbox for your convenience. And that's really a cool system. And we're going to do more stuff with that. I imagine we'll
That's not the only thing you've got added on there, I noticed.
No, it's not.
A little feedback thing that I think is kind of cool. I'm looking forward to some hearing.
Yeah, definitely. So, but yeah, as far as the mailing list, we've got some really cool stuff coming. We might have some exclusive content coming in on the mailing list. And or if you guys sign up, it'll be a really good way that we'll make announcements to make sure that you hear about stuff that we're doing. So we're going to definitely use and support that mailing list to be something really valuable and cool. If you guys want to sign up, you can go to the main website. You'll see a link there on the sidebar. But also, I made it super easy for you guys if you're driving the car or mowing or away from the internet right now while you're listening to this podcast. Just remember, go to StarWarsReport.com/mailing list, and a nice handy dandy thing to remember. Announcement number 3, Mark, I think you noticed it. New to StarWarsReport.com, if you go into the main site, you can go over to the page and you will see a nice little flash player that's embedded on a widget on the menu, and it's a link to us on Stitcher. Right now, the Star Wars Report podcast just became available on Stitcher Radio. And Mark, you may not know this, but
no, I did not.
Stitcher, they're the most popular way to get podcasts right now is the iTunes Store. But in the past year or two, the second most popular way has quickly become the Stitcher radio app, which basically creates a streaming radio station of all of your favorite podcasts that you can listen to. You know, live like a radio station, or on demand, you can download them. So in the same way, you know, we talk about one of the best ways to listen to a podcast is downloading the iTunes Podcasts app or Beyond Pod for Android. There's a number of these applications that are getting really popular for people to listen to podcasts on their smartphone, which I think is awesome, by the way, because if you're listening to it on a handy application where that user experience is a very simple experience, that for podcasting in general, especially Star Wars podcasting, is a fantastic thing. Because Nathan, you know this, the way you used to get podcasts to see a link to a forum post where you would manually right click and save the MP3 and then transfer that MP3 to your computer or MP3 player of choice and drag and drop.
I'm not sure about the old transfer to an MP3 player. When we started this stuff out, oh, it was so long ago. I'm not sure those existed unless you were megabucks out there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. At which
you could get it and burn it to a CD. Now you can listen to it on the go.
A reel-to-reel player is what we're trying to say. The cassette. You'd pop in your Sony Walkman and listen to the latest Star Wars podcast. No, but podcasting has come a fair way, and it's evolving, and more and more people are... I'm just looking at it in the stats. More and more people are tuning into our show and coming in each week who are using smartphones. Android and iOS, and these applications that just make it super simple to subscribe to a podcast and get the content, basically just as easy as DVRing a TV show, which once it becomes that easy and that common, you're going to get a lot more people who come into the old fold in Star Wars podcasting. So there we go. 3 announcements. We're on Stitcher again. Mailing list. Go to StarWarsReport.com/mailing list. Sign up. I was actually surprised because I wasn't sure because, you know, with email, some people are kind of private about it, but I do want to use it for something that really gives this summary of stories. If you sign up for our mailing list, what we'll probably do is a weekly roundup that you can get links to all the news about episode 7 coming out, And, of course, lastly, you can go to StarWarsReport.com/support, and that'd be a great way to support the website and the podcast housed here. All right, and without further ado, we're going to jump in to the episode. I don't have the cool news music queued up, but we have two notes. We mentioned him last week. There you go, Mark. We mentioned him last week. Michael Arndt is officially confirmed, literally probably within hours of us posting up the episode last week. Michael Arndt is confirmed for Star Wars Episode 7. He is indeed writing the screenplay, and that announcement was made on StarWars.com officially. And hey, it was kind of the big hype until the big news came out. Angry Birds Star Wars is also now available for download in all of your app stores.
And my phone has died 4 times since I've downloaded that.
You've played it so far, Mark?
No, my son has.
Okay.
Up until that 4th time, and I'm like, dude, you're done. I'm like, when it's shutting off and the battery is flashing at you, there's your sign. And yet I let him go 3 more times after that first one.
Yeah. Well, I wish you had played it. We could have gotten your son on and done a quick review of it. I haven't downloaded it yet.
I've had a chance to play it a little bit, but it was more of a. I was at the Georgia Educational Technology Conference when it came out, and it was like everybody was listening to the presentations and everything, and then very slowly but surely you'd see sort of this wave across the room where people are realizing, hey, it's up, and you'd start walking into rooms for panels, and as everyone's waiting for it to start, you could look over people's shoulders and Star Wars Angry Birds over here, Star Wars Angry Birds over there, oh, look, it's Star Wars Angry Birds over there. It's got a lot of mainstream appeal, I guess, that a lot of the regular Star Wars games haven't had of late. So yeah, it seems like it's huge, and it plays, you know, it plays like Angry Birds, but they've done enough different with the different birds that it feels fresh. It doesn't feel like just, you know, it's the same thing with different seasons. Now it actually feels like it's a new game in the same thought process. Like it's an evolution of the concept. Nice. Pretty cool.
Cool. Well, that's good to hear some firsthand experience with the game, and it kind of plays right into the success of Angry Birds. I think of Angry Birds Star Wars. I think definitely plays into that I guess new initiative, I guess is the word I'm looking for, from Disney, where they said they're going to focus more on social games instead of these big console releases. And it still remains to be found whether or not Star Wars 1313 gets the axe or whether that moves forward. They haven't said anything about it, so I'm assuming it's moving forward. But social games, I mean, they're very popular, these kinds of casual games. They're not really my cup of tea, although gaming in general is not really my cup of tea. I've said that before on the show. But speaking of gaming, something else I wanted to mention in this quick news segment is that Star Wars The Old Republic is now free to play. Ladies and gentlemen, you can go to swtor.com/free and download all 32 plus gigabytes to play for your very own. If that's something you are interested in doing, the Old Republic's had over 1 million subscribers since its launch, although it's lost a number. It actually almost hit 2 million subscribers at one point, but it's now closer to 1. But I'll be very interested to see if this kind of revitalizes it, because I've seen a lot of hullabaloo on the Star Wars fan site community today where the people seem to be very excited about it being free to play, which I think is kind of the way MMOs are moving.
Did either of you guys try it out?
Free to play? No, I did the.
In general,
yes, I did when they were doing one of the final beta tests. I signed up and got in on it and played literally for 20 minutes, and it was just unusable. The servers were way too crowded. So I still haven't. Nathan, have you actually had a chance to play The Old Republic at all?
Yeah, I wound up one of the first things when I got my new computer. In fact, it's part of what made me want to get a new computer someday, and then the last one dying was my excuse to do it. One of the first things I did was I went and did the that free trial version. I guess it capped you out at level 15 or something like that. My thought process was I was going to play through all the different class storylines. Wow, I'm ambitious and nuts to get all the information for the Star Wars Timeline Gold and everything. And I got about a third of the way into one of the Jedi storylines, like the Jedi Consular storyline, so I got a good feel for how it plays, but then I said, forget it, I'm just going to watch the story cutscenes on YouTube and get the information that way. It's fun. I mean, it can be kind of addictive. It's just one of those things that I can't imagine how anybody has the time to sink into that, to really get their money's worth out of it when it was a paid subscription. At least now, you know, you can play it a little bit here, a little bit there. And if you don't, it's not like you're wasting money by not playing.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. I think the Old Republic is definitely going to do a lot better as a free-to-play model. And ladies and gentlemen listening to the podcast, what I'm going to do, because I'm notorious for not doing post-production, and I've got a very good system down for not having to do post-production, which includes the digital audio recorder that I've got next to me right now, is about to be paused, and because I have lost Mr. Mark Herleman. I'll bring him back on and return in just a moment. And we are back. All right. And joining us once again, of course, for the people listening to the podcast, it was no time at all. But as you just said in the Skype call, Mark, 297 updates later, here you are.
I got to admit, that was the fastest my computer has ever updated something like that. When it came back up and it's all applying, update number one of 297, I'm like, no!
Exactly.
And then I was like, all of a sudden, it's at 297. I'm like, hey, this is actually kind of fast. I like these new technology
computers. Knew you were in a hurry, is what they're trying to say. So, yeah, we've got I want to jump straight into right now, guys. I want to – what a tradition on the Star Wars Report podcast for the longest time has been to actually as Clone Wars episodes air, do a couple minutes of discussion on them. And with those couple minutes of discussion, they would kind of reflect and go along with every single episode of the show as it airs on television. Now, of course, little do we know, at this point, I find it kind of amusing that some other news has happened. And so we've kind of been distracted the past two or three episodes as far as news coverage. But I do want to bring us back and just give our overall thoughts on the Clone Wars fifth season and what I think and have commonly said is second to last season. Now, of course, we started with the amazing Darth Maul episode, and we've continued on with the Onderon arc, and now we are smack in the middle of the Young Jedi series. And I've heard some differing opinions all the way around, but I wanted to bring you guys in on it and say what has been your favorite and least favorite parts of the Clone Wars so far this season. I'll start with you, Nathan.
You know, I've really been liking it. I think it's got the potential to be the best season so far. I mean, I covered it originally on the But Learniverse way back in the day. When the series was starting out. Now I've been part of Republic Forces Radio Network for several seasons now, and it seems like the general consensus among us has been, you know, it just keeps getting better. The visual quality is getting better. The storytelling quality is getting better. The choice of voice actors, in some cases, getting better as it goes along. This season, I think the Onderon arc was really, really well done. It didn't seem like there was any really major weak points in it. It's one of the more solid stories we've got. I'd put it at least within my top five, if not my top two. Really, the only thing that has bothered me so far about this season has been the whole issue with Revival, where they took Revival, and because I guess they wanted to, you know, make sure we got Darth Maul in really, really quickly, because that's what people want, they moved it forward from where it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, each of the arcs that have followed have had continuity issues thanks to them moving Revival up. So unless they just come out and say, you know what, Revival aired before those, but we are going to move it back to its original place so it makes sense. Unless they do that, they got to find a way to explain away Adi Gallia being present in episodes after she shouldn't be there anymore, or how Hondo's base is not blown up when it should be blown up because it's about to be blown up in the arc we're watching right now, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But aside from that minor quibble, which is really just a, it seems like it was more of a let's get people excited sort of shift, it's really been a good season so far. We're only, what, seven episodes or whatever it is into it, but very, very solid.
I've enjoyed it as well so far, Nathan, and I take your point. My theory is they will definitely at some point just admit that, you know, Revival is definitely out of order in the air date, because Adi Gallia is not isn't the only continuity error that has stemmed from that. The main one being that Hondo's base is kind of destroyed when you arrive at that episode, and later we see Hondo's base, and it's fine. It's all good here.
It's true. And he's referring back to events in Revival, you know, about, you know, the last time you Jedi, blah, 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 blah. Well, he's referring to events that we haven't seen yet because it's still a week or two away in what we're seeing right now. So, yeah, I think Revival was cool to have up front to see Darth Maul again, but I think it's been revealed pretty much obviously as the gimmick it was meant to be instead of it being in the right order from a storytelling standpoint. You know, storytelling's the most important thing. Yeah, uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Well, Mark, have you been following the Clone Wars so far?
7 episodes, huh? I'll be honest. I watched Revival, and I fell asleep through it 3 times, and I haven't watched Clone Wars since.
Really?
I know.
This
and
is news.
Honestly, now at this moment, I'm blaming it on the fact that I'm behind in my books, and that's taking the priority every time I don't have a chance to, you know, all my free time, it's either taking up editing beyond the films, reading my book, or taking care of the kids, or doing something with Scouts. So I really haven't had time to watch that. And I've been watching The Walking Dead. So it's like, well, you know, I'm talking my roommate into getting the Clone Wars show and playing it on our big, big projector because he's never really watched the show, but he is super hypercritical about these kind of things. I finally watched my first riff tracks for episode 1 because that's the kind of fan he is. And so, you know, it's been one of those things like, suddenly I've had to put my Clone Wars addiction kind of on the back burner. And plus, with them shifting the schedule like they did, it made it kind of hard to remember to download it on the next day because now the next day for me is now the next day after that. I wasn't watching it on TV as it was. I was getting it when it came online.
Sure.
But now it's moved back even farther. Now by the time that day comes where it's available, I've got so many other things going on that I miss that window to even watch it. And
yes.
So thanks,
wow.
Clone Wars.
Well, see, that's new to me because I did not know this fact about you, Mark.
You've been avoiding the Facebook page, haven't you? They're threatening to take my Defender of the EU title away.
Oh, no. Wow. But, well, that's interesting because I think that's almost worthy of a discussion in and of itself because it has been one of the most solid seasons so far.
I didn't know about the out-of-order thing. I mean, already I'm like, oh, well, then I'm not going to bother finishing Revival yet. I'll watch the other episodes and then catch it. But I've had that problem with the Clone Wars in general. I mean, let's go back to the Mortis trilogy. I mean, I'm still confused as heck about what happened in that. And I can't go back and watch it unless I want to go out and buy the show. And that, for me, has been what's been holding me back. I would love to be watching these again on DVD, but I have yet to come up with the cash and throw down. I really should. I mean, when I think about the fact that on Netflix and stuff, all I ever watch when I'm watching those, I put them on and I have them playing in the background. I would love to be able to do that with the Clone Wars. I really need to go out and just get them on the DVD and the Blu-ray. But like I said, it's the money factor right now that's keeping me from doing it. It's low on my list of Star Wars priorities, and it's finally caught up to the point where now that they've shifted the time and stuff, it's really taken the back seat. And it sucks because like I see the previews and stuff. I want to watch it, but I've discovered that, you know, once you've fallen off the wagon 7 episodes later, it doesn't really feel like I still like I'm in that when season 5 kind of start mode.
Yeah. Wow. So I can kind of see that. What I would encourage you to do, Mark, is jump in after the Young Jedi arc, technically. Now, what they're doing is it shows up on StarWars.com on Sunday, usually morning or afternoon, as far as I've tracked it. And that's the way I watch it as it comes available. And so StarWars.com usually has it pretty quickly, and it's pretty decent quality streaming from StarWars.com.
Well, see, that was the problem I had with Revival. It kept glitching so bad that I finally was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. And it's weird. Like I said, my netbook just fired up, did 297 updates in less than 5 minutes, and yet some days when I go to the Clone War or to StarWars.com, the videos just don't play, or they don't play right, or they're constantly glitching. And it's like, when I was watching, everybody's like, oh, these lightsaber battles are awesome. And it's like, it was for me because what I was seeing was like one screen and then like 12 screens would disappear. And then I'd see one screen and it was like, okay, this is so choppy that it ruined all the action for me. And I was just, it really, really frustrated me. So I just decided, well, since I don't have TV, I'm obviously going to have to go the DVD Blu-ray route. I mean, that's the only way I'm going to get quality Clone Wars. And I think that's where it came down to. Once I tried out that third time and it still was doing it to the point where I fell asleep, I'm like, okay, I'm done with this online. And that's what I did all last season when I ditched TV. When I ditched cable, I went strictly to online. Last season, it worked, but I don't know what has changed because I can watch other videos on my netbook just fine. But that one, you know, every time I tried to do it, it just kept glitching on me. I was like, ah, okay, well, I'm done.
Do you have an Apple device of some kind. I would say netbook for iTunes. Dang it, and there's my phone. Hang on, I'm going to mute while I figure out what
the heck
is up
with this.
Sure,
that's fine.
Got a suggestion.
Well, I'm not using Apple at the moment, but due to a Star Wars report, our video with the Wampa's Lair, I was having an issue with it, and I had to update QuickTime. I hadn't had that updated before, so I mean that could be the only problem I had, which is I was missing an update for something that I hardly ever use.
Well,
I hadn't really thought
be
beyond that.
Specifically,
that's
with
a very easy possibility.
Well,
yeah.
What I was going to say was if the netbooks, depending on which netbook it is, I've found that netbooks have some problems sometimes playing something through iTunes, but they release the episodes on iTunes immediately. So if you're gonna, if it's a matter of I want to spend the money once. If you don't really care whether you see it on DVD or Blu-ray versus seeing it through iTunes, and you'd rather, instead of having maybe the high-def thing with the Blu-ray, you'd be fine with, instead of high-def, getting them much, much, much sooner, then you just subscribe through iTunes. That's actually what I do. I wind up I'm a notorious Star Wars fan that is part of the problem, because I will, as far as like the constantly re-releasing stuff, because I'll DVR it. But then at the same time, because I know I got to go back to it for the timeline, I'll get the entire season off of iTunes in standard def instead of high def. And then when it finally comes out on Blu-ray, I'll get the Blu-ray version of it. So, I mean, I if you count paying for cable, I'm paying 3 times.
Yeah, but that's understandable.
Yeah, it's just, but I would just say that from the standpoint of accessibility, if streaming isn't doing it, iTunes, the iTunes copies are nice. They are very good quality. I mean, they're not going to be the...
How much is the low version that you're getting right now? I mean, how much are you paying for that subscription?
I want to say it's probably like $20-$30. I mean, it's about the same as buying a DVD season of most shows.
Okay.
I couldn't compare it necessarily to the DVD season of the Clone Wars, because I always buy the Blu-rays, which are going to cost at least a little bit more.
Yeah, the DVDs.
I mean, that's the big thing in our house right now. I mean, we've been moving into this new generation of technology. We just got the smartphone, and I am loving all the apps and the technology available. To be able to download a flashlight, little things like that, to have that available. But the TV side of things, my wife is having a real hard time with it. I mean, all the shows she wants to watch, she now can't watch, and they're not on Netflix yet, or like with The Walking Dead, we had to wait. I mean, I was only able to watch the season 3 because, like I said, my flatmate, he's really good with computers. He knows places to go to find downloads that I wouldn't even think about. And so he's like, oh, hey, I got you those episodes. I was like, what? So I was able to catch up on that. But I've resolved myself to the reality that I'm going to have to wait a full season behind everybody else. And from the Star Wars fanatic that I am, like Nathan, that is a difficult thing for me to swallow, knowing that I am now out of that loop. I mean, like all the continuity errors. I mean, that was the first I've heard of it, because I'm out of that loop. I'm kind of trying to stay out of that information, because it's like I don't want to spoil myself, but I want to know what's going on. And so I think once you start missing it, it's easier to step away, because you're like, well, I don't want to catch this one until I caught the other one, and you just don't have time for that one. And next thing you know, here you are 7 episodes later, and you're like, holy cow, 7 already? But the other side of that is like, I love the fact that, when I do get behind like this and I catch up, you get to watch them back to back to back to back. You don't have that week-long gap. So, I mean, there are some cool trade-offs, but there is that moment of feeling like, man, I really need to be back on this pony.
And you'll definitely probably get more out of the Onderon arc if you watch them back to back the way that you are likely to now, because it was definitely one of those that felt like one big story. It was not – it didn't feel particularly episodic at all.
Yeah.
It really felt like they were going for what they said they were going for originally, which is to make each arc almost feel like a miniature Star Wars movie.
Which is, I seriously considered at the beginning of the season. I love the turn of this conversation, because instead of just discussing the content of the episodes, I think this is actually almost an equally relevant talking about the distribution and the model and the way we choose to experience it. Because this season, I seriously considered, I think the biggest fault with following any television series week to week is that it just breaks up the story. And whether it's The Walking Dead or whether it's anything like that, of seasons of television shows that I've enjoyed most have always been watched consecutively. So that would be a good example. The Walking Dead is an example of that. More so is the new Battlestar Galactica series. Bethany and I went through it consecutively, and you could watch 3 or 4 episodes.
Awesome.
I know. And you could watch 3 or 4 episodes in a row, and you really didn't get that kind of break in momentum, and especially when it's 22 minutes and it's Star Wars. Star Wars is I like that feature length longer, long-form story. And I love the fact that they're doing arcs, but I seriously considered at the beginning of this season just waiting 4 episodes and then catching up. You know, waiting 4 episodes and then catching up.
Well, the downside of that, though, unless, like Nathan said, you're doing it on iTunes, StarWars.com doesn't put 4 episodes up. They only put up 3.
I would have to do...
Last year, that drove me up a wall. I'm like, Dad, the 4th episode come out. Come on, let's go sit down and watch it. And I'm like, wait, where's the 1st episode? And, man, once I figured that out, I mean, the best you could get was watching 3, waiting a week, and catching the finale. It was like, ah! It made sitting down with me, my son, and my dad all watching Star Wars very, very difficult.
Yeah, and that inconvenience will eventually overcome you, and give this example to you, Mark, is that now, you know, we're 7 episodes in and you haven't really been able to keep up. And I don't blame you, and I don't think you're, you know, some people might say, well, Mark's not a fan of Star Wars because he doesn't watch Clone Wars, you know. That's not the case at all. But I think as far
I've just fallen off the wagon, and it's going at hyperspace speed. Well,
it goes back to this. What I was talking about, watching several episodes in a row and then catching up using iTunes, I like that idea, but the only reason I don't and that I watch it week to week is honestly because I enjoy hearing the commentary of Republic Forces, of the Clone Wars Roundtable, of these Clone Wars podcasts that I listen to, and I actually really enjoy hearing the commentary on each episode as it airs. And it's rather inconvenient. It kind of goes back to that convenience factor. It's kind of inconvenient to actually go listen to that episode, to watch the episode and then go back in the archives and download commentary to it. You'd have to go into the archives of the podcast and the archives of the iTunes. So it goes back to convenience, where it's very handy to experience it with the rest of the fan community. But, you know, Battlestar Galactica Blood and Chrome just started putting episodes up on Machinima Prime's YouTube channel. And that is kind of a bold move towards new media. It's a series that did not get picked up by Sci-Fi, but Machinima Prime picked it up for distribution, and then they're going to put it out on DVD. I believe it's in January or February.
Yeah, 2013 as a movie.
I watched the first two episodes of Battlestar Blood and Chrome. Absolutely loved them. Fantastic stuff. But then I got to the end of it, and I wanted to keep watching, and I thought to myself, you know what? I just don't think I'm going to watch the 8-minute segments on YouTube as it airs.
I'm going to wait for the movie?
I'm just going to wait for the DVD. Yeah.
I don't blame you. I mean, I want to say, for me, Netflix has pushed me that way. I mean, I would rent the TV on DVD back when I used to go to the rental store all the time. And I'd watch my Prison Break, and I'd watch my Battlestar Galactica like that. And then I would go out, with Battlestar Galactica, I bought all that series. I plan on doing the same with Prison Break. I've just got the final break so far. But it's one of the things that when you do them back to back like that, and you're able to just sit down and watch the whole show at once, you really get so much more out of the story. And I mean... And I think, you know, this goes into even the EU. I mean, for me and Nathan, I mean, I'm having a hard time sometimes with some of the books when I jump from one era to the next era to the next era. And I mean, a lot of the elements are the same, but sometimes that similarity makes it confusing. I mean, it's not bad enough that I think they should have killed Anakin Solo because I was worried it was Anakin Skywalker. But I mean, I can kind of understand that concept and waiting till a series is finished and then reading it all and getting the most out of it in that aspect, because that the gaps... They do kind of pause the action and all the storytelling.
It's kind of funny. It's almost like it's the television equivalent of the same kind of thing we've been hearing with Star Wars off and on for a while now, especially from Dark Horse, for instance, about the whole thing of, you know, is Star Wars accessible or not? You know, from a TV series maker's perspective, from what I understand, at least, I haven't tried it. It comes down to, you know, do we want to make an episodic story where each one can be, you know, viewed and enjoyed for itself? Like, for instance, something like Castle that I watch, and you got your one episode, you watch it, it's good. There may be threads that connect that episode to future episodes or past episodes, but, you know, someone who doesn't necessarily follow it all the time can just watch it and enjoy it. It's easily accessible. But then you've got stuff like the bigger series, like, say, 24. You wouldn't want to have watched 24 and miss a couple of weeks and then try to jump into it. Same thing to a degree with the latter seasons of Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. With Clone Wars, I think Clone Wars strikes an interesting midpoint Because most of the time, not so much this season so far, but most of the time the Clone Wars is set up in such a way that if you just see one episode, it may feel like it's an abrupt ending because it's really meant to go on to another one, but it is kind of self-contained. You can watch it in a half an hour, enjoy it, and you're good. Whereas this season, it seems they're much more going in the opposite direction where their whole thing is, you know, we're going to tell these broader stories, and you're really going to feel as if you're watching, you know, miniature Star Wars films. Odd to see the Clone Wars going in the opposite direction, kind of stepping away from the accessibility. Everything else in Star Wars, it seems that it's, we're going to beat you over the head. We must make this accessible to others. The continuity is just too convoluted right now. But that seems to be the big dividing line. Do you make it episodic or do you make it, you know, serialized, or do you find some nice middle ground? Clone Wars is usually pretty good at the middle ground, but it seems like they are sliding in that other direction. I can't imagine trying to jump into, you know, say, the Onderon arc with the third episode. I mean, the Young Jedi stuff, to a degree, but Clone Wars being so fast-paced, it has that Star Wars pacing, and the Star Wars pacing generally means we can't really show you everything. Sometimes we got to compress stuff down between episodes into that opening crawl. I mean, heck, what'd they do first season? Oh, sorry, we're too fast-paced. Sometimes we're going to have to put a web comic between episodes so you know what the heck just happened. You know Obi-Wan and them? Obi-Wan and Anakin just avoided getting drugged drinks. Yeah, they're drugged now. How did that happen? We didn't mess up. There's a web comic for it. Don't worry. Sometimes the pacing itself makes it where it... jumping in the middle can be tough with these, especially lately.
That's one for the history books, by the way. I think that's probably one of the most blatant, odd distribution things that is just a failure of storytelling in general of that specific webcomic. Because I remember when that happened in season one, and if I ever have the privilege or honor of interviewing Dave Filoni on this show or any show, that is probably one question I would want to ask him and just say, What was up with that?
What were you thinking?
And I'm sure it wasn't his pure decision, but I'm just... at what point of the decision-making process did it break down to where they say, from this episode to this episode, if you watch them consecutively, it would literally make no sense? And that's not hyperbole. Well,
they came back to that approach, though, because I was funny Mark saying about how, you know, there's things that confuse him about Mortis. Don't worry, Mark. I think there are still things that confuse the writers of the episodes about Mortis, because he changed all their rules for part three from part one and two.
Well, and I love the idea. Mortis is a kind of a different idea where I really like the idea behind it and the concept of Mortis.
And the visuals are gorgeous. Yeah. It's amazing.
It's just the execution was a little bit off.
On that delivery. Yeah.
But
I will kill my father. No, father, don't die. Wait.
Well, it's kind of like Lori in season two. Okay, I won't go there.
Okay. Oh no! See the Lori thing. I'm sorry. I'm a Walking Dead comic book reader also, and I find myself, as fun as it is watching the series, I keep finding myself sitting back going, yeah, I like that better than the comic. Yeah, I kind of like that better than the comic too.
Oh,
kind of stuff. I'm one of those overcritical. What would you call a Walking Dead nerd at this point? A walker? A zombie? Something? A deader? Yeah,
dead geeks walking.
I was gonna say Die Hard, but that's another franchise, kind of like they say Twi Hard.
You know, but that's one of those things. Was what the Walking Dead has done. You know, and I say this in the aspect of what we could possibly see with the Disney movies down the road. Mm-hmm. You know, they openly said right out the gate, well, in the comic, Rick lost his hand. And, you know, that really hampered a lot of our storytelling down the road. So we've already decided we're not going to do that. And they've been establishing that right from the get-go. And yet they're still kind of staying true to aspects of things. Like, events don't happen the same way or to the same people, but they still happen. Like, you know, we saw Herschel lose his leg. But in the comic, it wasn't Herschel that lost his leg. It was someone else they picked up. We see Merrill lose his hand. Well, that was Rick's hand in the comic. I mean, they're still having the stuff. It's not in the same scene. I mean, to me, it's kind of like the Ultimate Spider-Man universe. It's like just a different take on it. I'm as long as I look at it like that, I can be fine with different changes.
So we can do the Star Wars movies could have a Yuuzhan Vong invasion, only it turns out they're not these bloodthirsty, droid-hating, crazy alien invaders. They're a little more like Vulcans. So it's easier to do in the movies. Just make them pointy ears.
The logistics. Well, yeah, I don't think
elves instead of.
It's not that they're trying to take over the galaxy. They're trying to clean it up. They're like intergalactic environmentalists now.
One thing I'd be very interested to see with episode 7. We'll get into it in just a minute. Is just to see what the budget that is. If it's more than the prequels, less than the prequels, if they're going to go for that $200, $300 million budget, or if they're going to stick with the prequels, which were about $100 million a piece.
Milk that Mickey money.
Well, I mean, because honestly, I think it has the potential to invest that much, that big scale style money. But yeah, on Clone Wars, we'll delve into the stories maybe a little bit later in the season. Mark, maybe you'll have a chance to catch up. Or Mark, I would encourage you to, if I were just to make a recommendation, I would say try a different browser, clearing the cache and cookies, and give it another whirl once the Young Jedi arc is over, and just following it from there. Because historically with the Clone Wars, you don't have to follow it in order, with the exception of these specific arcs. As long as you jump into an arc new, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's my hope. I mean, I know they're not going anywhere. It's just a matter of getting them down and sitting down and taking the time to do it.
yeah. Well, yes, that's true. So there you go. And I will say this, just back kind of my closing thoughts on the distribution thing. If I were to just make a proposal and I were sitting there in the big chair, you know, Kathleen Kennedy calls me up and she's like, ring, ring. And I'm like, hello? Oh, hey, Kathy, how are you doing? You know, this is how I imagine this conversation going down. Oh no! Sure,
I'd have been like, "Yo, Kennedy, what's up?"
No, I've got free time Friday. Okay, yeah, we'll meet. And so then we meet for lunch, and I'm like, "So here's what you got to do. Listen up. You know, Machinima and these other YouTube channels have proven that that original content that's really engaging, that storytelling. There's another one. Oh, I'm blanking on the name. It's on Hulu's doing some original series that are very popular that are just straight to web, but so is YouTube. And there was one that I watched a few mini episodes of where they're releasing these 3 to 5 minute episodes. And it was about, I think I want to say it was H+. Yes, H+ was the name of this series, guys. And have you guys heard of it by any chance?
Nope. No.
Basically, what it was is a NBC show that was initially done. They were working on a pilot, and NBC said, "No, we're not going with that. We're going with Revolution." Basically, so we've got Revolution airing now.
Oh, great show, man! I'm watching that online.
Oh yeah, Revolution is something I'm also watching on Hulu. Besides, it's not the Revolution podcast, but H+ basically was a futuristic film. Premise of it is years in the future, everyone basically uses implanted holographic style imagery that interacts with gestures and their brain. And it's basically a small implant that goes into your brain that interacts with your nervous system and your visual, and it actually prints basically not hallucinogenic, but actual like something that your eye and only your eye would see, just kind of in front of you. So you have this translucent display in front of you wherever you walk, and the general idea is that your computer is in you. And so you have this interface that you look somewhere and
we're
you're
all
saying,
geniuses.
Yeah, well, no, not just that, but more like just a convenience factor.
I just looked
like
on the Wikipedia. I didn't.
Exactly. Yeah.
You think it's hard to drive and text at the same time.
I know, exactly. Actually, that was part of the plot. I'll get to that in a second. But it does go back to Star Wars, I promise. The idea is if these kind of interfaces are what's prevalent in the future, you would basically just look at somewhere and get information, live input that's layered on top of your normal senses. So it's basically just a super enhanced version of a smartphone implanted into your brain. So the same information you usually rely on your smartphone, that kind of real-time updates of what's going on, who's the what's, the where's, the why's that we depend on our smartphones, just implanted into you. It's a really cool concept, something I could definitely see Google's glasses technologies shown up to have that kind of virtual interface. Long story short, problem with this happening is, what if there's a mass computer virus? And of course there is, and everyone in the world literally dies because it blinks into their nervous system, shuts it down, and you die. So the only people who survive are people who, the very few percentage of humanity who's either too poor or too paranoid to install these chips into their brain, or the handful of people who are like in a bunker or in a parking garage where you wouldn't get signal. Which I find kind of hilarious that even in the future, where this ultimate threat is going to kill us all, the one thing that's going to save us is AT&T's bad cell coverage.
Nice. The world is my apartment, apparently.
Exactly. Exactly.
Alone in his apartment, a deserted island of technology.
So I say all that to say, I think that this is a very popular show that releases in 3 to 5 minute segments that you can follow. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow it. And it's gotten very popular. It's get 10, 20, 30,000 hits, and it was actually growing as I was watching it. Now, actually, kind of not unlike other television shows, I kind of gave up on it because it was too irritating to just watch 5 minutes at a time once a week. So I'm just going to wait until the DVD comes out. But it's still very successful and very, very popular.
Yeah, it sounds like you've decided, I want to watch this. Yeah. I will wait for it to come out. I mean, that's kind of goes back to when Red Harvest came out, and they were giving us all those free excerpts, and everybody was complaining, they've given us half the book already. It's like, well, obviously, if you've read the first one, and you're like, I want to read this, you should stop. They've got you. You're hooked. Get the book when it comes out.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the same thing like that. I mean, I remember so many people getting mad. It's like, just enjoy what is there. I mean, maybe you need a little more to get hooked. Maybe you're not quite convinced yet. Yeah. There's another 5 minutes coming next week. You can watch that, too, until you make up your mind.
Well, and so think about it this way. I thoroughly am enjoying that. I thoroughly like the idea of Battlestar Blood and Chrome, these mainstream productions that were either NBC or otherwise that are working in an online area. I think that was a really, really long-winded way to get to this conclusion. But I think that that the Clone Wars in a 22-minute segment would actually work very well on the main Star Wars YouTube channel, the official YouTube channel that they've been putting a lot of content on. And I certainly don't think it would hurt their viewership because their target audience isn't on YouTube. So it's not going to make people stop tuning in on Saturday mornings, but it would probably just make that many more people share in a social environment like YouTube, share the Clone Wars as it happens, especially as you're getting...
And it's not as though people aren't already illegally doing it every week anyway.
I mean, you just torrent
it. So it's already there.
Yeah. I mean, they already put it the next day on StarWars.com, and my theory is that's to actually get people who would probably torrent it, the hardcore Star Wars fans who just don't have cable or have other circumstances that don't allow them to watch it or record it, then they're just going to torrent it. I mean, everybody knows that. And that's, you know, that's the ultimate thing, is that you can't shut down piracy. You essentially, companies are being forced to compete with privacy. So they have to give more convenient, better content in a more convenient way, in a better presentation. And that's what I think Clone Wars could really stand to do. And Lucasfilm certainly come very far. They were putting, even with season one, it was a week delayed, but they were putting their episodes up on StarWars.com.
Arr, the Dread Pirate Whitebeard.
But that's also, I would say, I mean, and I know there's no way to really fight piracy. I mean, it's a major changing environment. You know, the more they use, for instance, digital rights management, DRM, to fight piracy, the more people you have griping about, I have to enter X number of codes to play my video game, or I have to be always online to play the video game, whatever it might be. But at the same time, you know, the landscape, and maybe this even bears an episode in and of itself at some point, the landscape changing is shifting the nature of what we can see for Star Wars. I think a big part of, you know, what we're seeing with Star Wars and what they're saying about how, well, we're just basically going to license it out as opposed to making our own games anymore. Or we're going more social media type games and the little fun cutesy casual games like Angry Birds Star Wars, instead of doing the full-blown Star Wars games. Part of it is the development costs. Now, you know, to sell a $60 game is tougher now because you've got, you know, $2, $3, $4, $5 apps. You know, we're in the era in which $5 for a game on the iPad, I can't believe you're making me pay $5 when console games are $60. And but also you have this issue of, you know, the era of the computer-based or the PC-based video game is dying in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And the Old Republic, you know, I was shocked when they didn't do like DC Universe Online and do a console version of it, because immediately piracy becomes the concern. How do you do a giant, big-budget PC release like the Old Republic that's just a PC release when you know piracy is going to start eating into it? It's almost like free-to-play is one of the few viable models that are left. You know, Star Wars is having to play catch up in terms of the way that it presents its stories. And, you know, YouTube might be that. You know, the serialized online stuff might be the way for them to do it. But,
well, and
I don't know. I have a lot of fear and trepidation in that particular arena. I'm not sure that the big the big, big budget corporation, whether it's Disney, Lucasfilm, which are now sort of blending into the same thing, Paramount and so forth, I'm not sure that they're there yet. It's almost like they look down their noses in many ways at that type of distribution, and yet that's what is the new wave. Well, they need to get on board with.
Well, and I heard one of my—I was doing some research on Bob Iger when the announcement was made, because I knew as CEO of Disney, he's going to have an enormous influence on the future of Star Wars. I think almost as big as Kathleen Kennedy's influence moving forward. I think people severely underestimate the influence that Bob Iger has over this as CEO of Disney. Just because he affects the Disney company dramatically, which of course is now going to in turn affect Star Wars because of Lucasfilm, and he's known to be a huge proponent of social gaming, and of really heavily targeting younger audiences with their content, because obviously Disney, that's kind of their target audience anyway. But I think Star Wars has kind of aged with... This is kind of coming to me. I just had a brilliant thought, gentlemen. Star Wars is kind of, if you think about it, with Force Unleashed, whether it's the Clone Wars, which is definitely matured in style, or the Force Unleashed, or Star Wars 1313. Some people think it'll be rated M. Some people... I think it's confirmed, actually. I don't actually know. I haven't been following it that closely, but
yeah, they said it's going to have some mature content, so it will be their first M-rated Star Wars game.
Really, well, which kind of lends to my point here being that Star Wars has kind of tried to age with the fans, and I think that's one reason people don't like the prequels, is because the prequels are very, very they target with whether it's the fart jokes in The Phantom Menace, or, you know, they target a younger audience. They kind of appeal to
Jar Jar stepped in poodoo.
Exactly. But and you know, sure, the prequels have their problems, but I think often the problems is perception and expectation of embittered adults, instead of actual that the films are as bad as people like to say they are. You know, anyway, but I wrote a whole article on it about, you know, what... The title of my article is part of the biweekly op-eds that we're doing at StarWarsReport.com that we've been doing for a while now, and I don't mention them often enough, but there's always some really good ones. But anyway, I wrote an article called What the Phantom Menace Can Teach Us About Episode 7. And if you think about it, I think Disney's really going to bring Star Wars back to its roots of targeting a much younger audience. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It could still be done well. I mean, certainly Pixar, which targets a young audience, is still, for adults, some of the most compelling films that are out there right now.
Mm-hmm. I think what we ran into with Phantom Menace was Lucas himself, I think, doesn't quite know how to recapture that kind of energy. You know, I think his whole thing was, I'm going to make a new mythology for a new generation originally. And then when the prequels came around, it was, I'm going to tell this tragic story, but I also wanted to appeal to kids also, so I'm going to just throw in the kiddie humor from time to time. That is one thing that Disney does extremely well. You know, as an adult, I still from time to time find myself watching bits of things like Aladdin or Lion King, you know, because it's just fun. You know, it's just good, great to hear, fun, kids, amusing, man. Stuff, you know. It's Star Wars. I think the Clone Wars has done a very good job in many respects of being kiddie at times, but at the same time being able to appeal to the older audience. Why? Because it plays to the classic Star Wars feel in a lot of ways. Katie Lucas, in a lot of ways, is a torchbearer for what Star Wars was before she was even a Lucas, you know. Disney has a chance here to really bring Star Wars back to its roots. You're absolutely right. It makes you wonder if this is the best thing that could have happened for Star Wars, you know, because you know, there has been that argument, you know, one of the worst things for Star Wars in the last decade. There are those fans who say the worst thing that has happened to Star Wars is Lucas himself. I'm not sure that I agree with that.
Sure.
But if Lucas's way of trying to reach out has not been quite what it needed to be to reach all levels of audiences, then perhaps Disney's phenomenal success with doing so is just what Star Wars needs. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, see, I think what the prequels have the right theme and sometimes the wrong execution. So I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong thematically with the prequels. And as far as the story, you know, those are some of the first films in the Star Wars franchise I saw, and here I am today. I didn't say, look at these horrible films, you know.
I had an epiphany about the Phantom Menace, though, when I was watching that riff tracks.
All right.
In any...
That was profound, my friend. Okay, you'll have to say it again. Skype just stopped for a second.
Government, where have you ever heard of one?
Mark, can you hear us?
Yeah, you're
just breaking up for a second. Sorry, you'll have to just start over.
We didn't get any of that. Try it again.
Okay. Well, when I was watching that riff tracks for The Phantom Menace, the one thing that struck me was how simple and easy it was for Amidala to just show up, walk into the Senate and say, I call for a vote of no confidence, and Valorum is ousted. I mean, in the real world, you'd have to have petitions. I mean, episode 3, all the petition stuff where they were trying to do petitions then to get rid of Palpatine,
that's all
out the door.
History teacher, Nathan,
yes.
What does it take to what does it take to oust the President of the United States? What is it? Isn't
President of the United States?
You would need three-fourths majority, right?
Articles of impeachment from the House of Representatives. You would need to have a trial held within the Senate. And even then, even if someone is found guilty of high crimes or misdemeanors, the only things you can be impeached for, or at least that you're supposed to be able to be impeached for, even then, impeachment in and of itself does not necessarily necessitate removal from office. It is a very difficult thing, which is why it hasn't ever happened yet. Only time we've ever seen impeachment cause someone to leave office in terms of the presidency was when the threat of articles of impeachment being passed for Nixon caused him to freak out and resign instead.
Yes, that was precedent set, which if you want to take to the Star Wars universe, I think, Mark, there was definitely precedence for the disenfranchisement was already there, and I think Palpatine had been sowing those seeds. But sure, I can see your point.
She called
Mark, you'll have
the man.
You'll have to start over again, Mark.
It's not the man that's causing the issue.
It's
the system. And yet she calls out the man. The man gets... Is it any better now?
Yeah, all right. Try again.
Okay. Well, it's the system, though, that... It wasn't the man. And yet she gets the man thrown down and then turns around and leaves Coruscant. Nobody gets... You know, maybe it's this girl that's the issue here.
Mark, unfortunately, you're not coming through. What I would suggest is I'm going to hang you up and start you again because I think we had just gotten going on a really good conversation. So I'm going to ring back Mark and seeing if restarting the call helps him out. But yeah, I guess I'm trying to remember where I left off. I will say this. I think with The Phantom Menace, and Mark, I know you're back, but we'll see if that fixed the connection. But with Phantom Menace, I don't really think that it's anything terribly wrong with the films. They certainly have their faults, but I people seem to naively think that, you know, the prequels and George Lucas are all that's wrong with this franchise, and the main problem is themselves, if you ask me.
At the same time, the prequels weren't classic Star Wars. The prequels couldn't be classic Star Wars. It's not classic mythology. He was setting out to tell a tragedy. You don't tell a tragedy in the same way you tell mythology. It's just a different beast.
Yeah. So the people who are now, you know, partying up and down, jumping like minions, saying that, you know, hooray, George Lucas is no normal, you know, he's not around anymore. Everything's going to be okay now. I don't really think that's the case. And when it jumps back, I think thematically, George Lucas's fingerprints are A, going to be all over these new films, and B, when it comes to the way Disney executes them, I think they will be targeting that younger audience in the way that Bob Iger has really done well, especially now that Disney is one of the best films in terms of leveraging social networking to target kids. Outside of the world of Facebook, outside of the world of Twitter, there resides a lot of these free online games and systems that kids can play. And if you look at Minecraft, you've 10 million users of Minecraft, most of whom are under 12. That's basically Legos for this generation. Think about it.
My roommate plays that game.
Exactly. See, Mark? So, Mark, you had a profound thought, and your Skype connection kept messing up.
Oh, it was just the thought of how Amidala did it with the political system. And yet, when I watched it, it wasn't Valorum that was doing it. I mean, granted, that was where Palpatine played it up. He made her seem that way. But the way she enacted the system, it just seemed like that shouldn't have worked. And if anything, you'd have had decriers going, hey, you know, she came here just to disrupt our system. She didn't get her way, and then she left. I mean, all she did is she came in and just threw everything into chaos. And, oh, hey, how convenient is that? Her own senator got elected. I mean, it happened so smoothly that I was just – it was the first time I stopped and said, wait a minute.
But it's the will of the Force. That's the excuse for anything that just goes exactly the way that the writers want it to in Star Wars.
Oh, that's true.
And what I wanted to say to you, Nathan, you know, you were mentioning how you like to watch Disney shows every now and again. Once you have kids and you watch shows that you've seen before that you've really enjoyed and you watch their reactions to it, it is a totally different experience. And then you go to the movie theaters and you watch movies like Shrek, and the humor is just going over the kids' head, and the adults are just laughing, riotously, and are just dying from the little so smooth you didn't even catch it jokes that are just flying over kids' heads, and yet the kids are laughing at all the boogers and the poop jokes and stuff like that that the adults are kind of like, you know. But they do a really good job of blending the two, and that's something as a father. I have very much appreciated, because it's not like we sit down like some of these kids shows where I'm just like, oh, really? We got to watch this again, you guys? When I sit down to watch a Disney show with my kids, I genuinely enjoy watching it, even if it is something I've seen 150 times.
Yeah. I would agree with you there, Mark. And I guess I'll finish off by saying this. If you think about it, in the article I read, I kind of used the example of Joe Blankety Blank. Now, Joe Blankety Blank hasn't liked anything in the movie theaters that has anything to do with Star Wars since 1980, and he is now absolutely convinced that, you know, Star Wars Episode 7 will be the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's going to be awesome. I'll tell you what, man. And the reason he's convinced this is because he's already told himself that it's going to be an exact adaptation of the Zahn trilogy, and that's going to, you know, tickle him pink. Or because it couldn't possibly be an adaptation. Or because it's going to recast the big three or not. You know, so just insert name of director that, you know, Joe wants, and that's going to be the one it is. And the second the announcements start coming that it's not exactly what this particular person wants, then they'll be disenfranchised. And I think we will actually see, knowing what we know now, and certainly things, a lot more information is going to come forward. Knowing what we know now, I really do believe that there will be a very, very loud and frankly obnoxious backlash to Star Wars Episode 7 of a lot of people who are going to say that this movie is horrible. It's going to be panned critically. And however, it will also be the most financially successful Star Wars film to date, and continue to be so as the franchise moves forward with a new generation of younger kids who don't care what people are saying on Twitter.
Can I? One thing that might be of interest to people to check out. You know, we like to think that the hue and cry was all about the prequels. You know, that when Episode 3 came out, people were griping, well, it didn't turn out the way I expected. He turned too fast, et cetera, et cetera. Or Attack of the Clones, too much CG. Episode 1, it just sucks. I can't tell you how many times I heard even, like, mainstream radio stations giving reviews. It just tore into the Phantom Menace and such. We tend to think that the way that the Star Wars fans often do is that we loved the classics, and it was just, like, all this adoration. And it's the prequels that always got the big hype speculation, and then got that whole letdown aspect, and then people griping about it.
Sure.
Take the time to pick up not the Star Wars Omnibus a long time ago, not classic Star Wars a long time ago, the trade paperbacks. Go back and pick up some of the original Marvel Comics series issues, the real deal. Those things have letters pages, real letters page, where people actually had to write in on paper. And the editors responded to almost every single email, or every single email, every single letter that they printed. Very rarely was it just, thank you very much, and moving on. They would give detail. The speculation about The Empire Strikes Back, the speculation about Return of the Jedi, and the reactions thereafter are very much mirroring the type of things that we see now. You've got the hype, you've got the disappointment in some cases, the love it or hate it type of relationship with it, you know. That's Star Wars. Heck, maybe that's just media in general. But, you know, it's interesting if you get a chance to take a trip down memory lane with the old Marvel stuff. We realize that, you know, fans are fans, and you know, we haven't really changed all that much. So expect the same pattern to happen again with these. But then again, you know, we lived through it the last, you know, couple of trilogies. It'll be okay.
Yeah, I mean, the Star Wars franchise certainly survived the prequels, and I think certainly has done fine. It's in fine hands, and it's going to be enormously successful. And that can sound a little bit, I guess, despondent, a little bit depressed, because I'm faced with the reality of, I realize that a lot of these people who are now super excited the second they announce the director, or the second the first trailer comes out, or the second, you know, certain rumors come out, you know, people will, it will be panned. But, you know, I think that's just the reality of what we're going to face. I've been disappointed, because I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, and The Hobbit comes out in just a few weeks, and I'm very excited to see it. But, you know, there's been a lot of mixed reaction, and some people who say it's going to be terrible. But I guess the difference between now and then is that you have to have a filter that you didn't have to have back then, because of this ubiquitous ability to say whatever we want to say and scream out at the world and just try to get as many people to listen to us as possible. Really, I mean, this podcast is a medium of it, and we could certainly be part of the problem. That's why we try to stay mostly positive on the show, because I realize that everything is somebody's favorite. So it's you can certainly approach something with a critical eye. But I think it bodes well for you to make sure that anything that you want to be critical, make sure that you're always being more positive than negative overall. Because I think if you're being more negative than positive, if you just have that scale there and the way that you're approaching something, or the way what you think of, whether it's any hobby, whether it's Star Wars or otherwise, you get to a point where you probably, if it's more negative than positive of an experience, that you should probably remove yourself. And I think that, unfortunately, too many people just thrive on the negative end of things, and that's why you have the popularity of people like Red Letter Media. And, of course, now, I don't know, have you guys heard of Honest Trailers by any chance?
No.
Okay, people can look them up. They're basically parody trailers, and they talk about, actually, I'm going to kick it over to Nathan and say, am I crazy? That's also another way to say vamp. am I crazy to think this? In today's lightning reaction internet age, where whether or not a movie will make it or break it is decided on Friday night when everyone goes and sees it, and no one will see it Saturday and Sunday if it gets enough negative press. Is that enough to kill a Star Wars movie, or do you think it will outlive people who may react to it negatively?
Well, I'd say Star Wars is one of the franchises that has the ability to survive something like that. I would say that type of thing is something that's going to kill a new franchise. If you're trying to launch a brand new IP, a brand new intellectual property, and it gets universally panned very quickly, you know, that's the death of that. Same thing with things like video games. I mean, people live and die by Metacritic scores now. But Star Wars? No. I mean, Star Wars, Star Trek, Lord of the Rings, you know, there are franchises out there that could survive just about anything, you know?
Sure.
I'm hopeful, though, that what we'll see instead is, it won't be, we're just going to bash it because it's a new Star Wars film and it's not the classics, so much as maybe the mainstream movie reviewers out there, the ones that are going to be seen on television constantly as opposed to just the internet, maybe this time, instead of it being, wow, this stinks because it's not the originals, maybe it'll be, wow, these are great because they're not the prequels. Maybe they'll let that same snark that infested them last time do it again, as if only this time their snark towards the prequels wind up showing the new films in maybe a better light.
It's like the ultimate scapegoat.
Star Wars is one of those films, I don't think people choose whether they go to see a Star Wars movie based on reviews. They just either go to see it because of Star Wars or they don't, as opposed to most movies where reviews actually might make a difference in what you see when you're looking down the list on Friday night.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say, though, that there is a thin line between snark and hate. And I want to say, you know, to point out, like, Riley tends to be quicker to look at snark as hate, you know, and that's not a bad thing. You know, that's a positive way to look at things. But I come from a family of very snarky individuals, and there can be fun in picking at things that we don't like, as long as we remember that we like these things. And I think that's the key core of those people that, like you said, the minions that are coming out is like let's take Simon Pegg, for example. He loved the original trilogy, hated the prequel trilogy, and yet came back for the Clone Wars to voice it. And I remember, you know, Riley, that threw you off. But I think, like, this is an example of what we're seeing with the episode 7 and on. You know, you see in these fans that are thinking, well, you know, maybe this is my chance to get back on board. Maybe this is the fun stuff. But, yeah, they're not going to be 100% happy. But they can maybe be happy in picking apart the 10% of the stuff they don't like, or the 40% of the stuff they don't like, or even if it's 90% of the stuff they don't like. But, you know, I guess it comes down to, if you don't like that kind of criticism, you might have to find a different place to go, or those people need to find a place where they can find other like-minded individuals. I mean, I know when I talk to people in the physical presence, you know, off the internet about Star Wars, I get very different reactions than I do when I talk to my friends online, or even casual people that I don't know online, because online I'm dealing with people that I genuinely know, for the most part, like what I'm liking. When I talk to people in the real world, I'm taking a gamble. I mean, you know, it's not always people out there loving it. A lot of people, they hear sci-fi and they go running around screaming, "Not for me!" But I'm the type of, like, you got to go check this out. Even if you don't like it and you hate it, there's going to be something in there that you're going to be like, wow, that was cool.
Yeah, no, I definitely. And I think that's a good way to approach it. And the reason I mentioned Honest Trailers, guys, is I'm going to play this little clip. What was the most popular, one of the most critically acclaimed and popular films this summer? And go.
Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man.
All right. Take two.
Dark Knight Rises, maybe?
Take three.
Which I still haven't seen either.
The Avengers.
Yes. All right, you got it.
Ah, there we go. Wonderful.
I'm going back farther in my summer.
All right. So, Avengers, take a listen to this, guys. The audio right here.
From Joss Whedon, god of the nerds, comes the movie blockbuster that finally unites the world's greatest superheroes that Marvel still has the rights to. The Avengers, the ultimate two-hour geek fantasy that blinds all nerds from admitting any legitimate criticism and put all of DC Comics on suicide watch. A villain who inexplicably returns from the dead will vow vengeance on the planet where his demigod brother's sort of girlfriend lives, forcing this Bluetooth-obsessed government agency to assemble the heroes from Marvel's greatest franchises.
All right, so there we are, partway through. And you're like, oh, it's kind of humorous, kind of snarky, certainly, kind of poking fun at Avengers. But you get through it, and it gets increasingly kind of turns up the – you've got the snark to hate meter, and it's on the snark meter first, and you kind of hear that – as it goes towards the hate meter, and it basically ends with basically saying, with you calling, I don't even remember, but basically some very negative and sexist remarks about Black Widow, and then ends with, I believe, calling Captain America gay in a negative way, and, you know, and it's very, very, and it basically ends with a bad taste in your mouth. Well, I was laughing at the beginning of it, and then I was at the end, I was like, oh.
You're like, wait a minute, this is turning bad. This is like a sour kid. Oh my gosh, it's a crybaby.
But it's extremely popular, but I read a great op-ed on the popularity of Honest Trailers. So now, of course, it got, you know, 2 million hits, and so they just started doing one of those trailers for every single popular movie that comes out. Now they have an Honest Trailers version, and it goes viral, and everybody says, isn't this funny? But that kind of negativity is really where they really, really just lay into anybody who likes the film and kind of call you an idiot if you like the film instead of just hated it and tried to find every single little problem, like whether or not everyone was wearing Bluetooths. So it's that kind of mindset that I think's pretty infectious right now, where Avengers, huge mainstream success, a loud minority of people who pick it apart. And of course I'm like, why would you? It's the Avengers. It's awesome. But there are these films that seem to be above criticisms and films that seem to not be so much. So I think the original Star Wars trilogy is certainly a set of films that's kind of above criticism from today's mainstream pop culture, and the prequels are not. And I think as we move forward, it's interesting to see that balance of that tipping point of whether or not a film becomes panned critically or not, or panned in terms of a vocal minority of people or not. So anyway, I'm not really sure what the answer to the question is.
Well, the question I was going to propose to you is, I think the danger here is the first time impressions, the people that haven't made up their mind. I mean, you know, if you have no idea about this movie and you see a trailer that like you said, goes from snark to hate by the time it's over, there is a good possibility you're going to go into that movie with a little hate meter of your own already dialed up. Or sometimes you have the opposite of that, where you go in and you see this trailer that just looks so glorious and you get the hype effect. You're like, oh, this movie was so hyped up. It's like, well, it wasn't really necessarily hyped up. It was just a really good trailer, and it made you assume a lot of really cool things because they took things out of order. And then when you saw them in order, it wasn't as impressive as you thought it was, which I think is what the heart of your article was that, you know, don't get too carried away in your speculation because you may be creating the big monster out there. Maybe it's not Lucas per se that's the monster. It was your impressions.
Sure.
I mean, and I think that's where it's the most dangerous for those coming in because – those, you know, that first time seeing it, that first time it's been presented to you, I really think that's the moment that is going to get you. Granted, you could say, well, I'm not sure, I don't like that, and then see a really cool trailer later and then get on the bandwagon. But I think once you've gotten onto the hate wagon, it's really hard to get off.
Well, that plus sometimes people would jump onto the hate wagon just so they're not on the bandwagon. It's like there's a lot of people out there who absolutely hate Apple and refuse to buy Apple products. Now, there are some legitimate issues that people have with Apple, but to say I hate Apple just because everybody likes it, yeah, that's kind of dumb, and yet it happens. You know, it happens with almost anything that's majorly popular at this point, and you can bet Star Wars is going to see the same thing with the new films.
I think so, but I do think the films will be a mainstream success, and I think there's certainly a lot of great potential there, and I do think that they will be thematically different from the prequels. But still have some of that core part of what makes Star Wars so great. Oh my goodness. Wow, that was a great in-depth conversation, guys. And now we are unfortunately coming to the end of episode 70 of the Star Wars Report.
Wow, we only got past the first topic.
I know. We simply ran out of time. We still had some other things. We had a video part two of the weekly StarWars.com updates. They're doing interviews with George. Kathleen Kennedy talks about how they're definitely making Star Wars movies. Like, in case you're
and
doubting.
It's not going to be somebody that has no affinity for it. I was like, yes!
Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna get the writer that's only done one quick little film and then Toy Story 3. Woo!
Yeah, I know. So we didn't get to talk about that. We had a great discussion lined up about John Williams, but that is continuing on our Facebook page. We had a great discussion about who should be the next composer to fill the shoes of John Williams, or will he get out of his crickety rocking chair and come back to Abbey Road Studios to conduct the London Symphony Orchestra once again as an 80, I guess at that time he'd be 81, 82 years old. I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him. Oh, my goodness. All right. So, guys, if you enjoyed this episode, we thank you for tuning in, first of all. And if you enjoyed it, please consider leaving us an iTunes review. That's a great way to have folks find out about us and find out a little bit more about us. You can follow us on Twitter at Star Wars Report. And it's also very easy to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/StarWarsReport. And that's, of course, where our interesting John Williams discussion was going. A lot of great, great suggestions, too, from Michael Giacchino to Jerry Goldsmith to David Arnold to even Kevin Kiner, who's doing the current Clone Wars stuff. Although my personal favorite choice, I will say this, Hans Zimmer. Hans Zimmer, I think, would be a fantastic choice. Now, I know he's a little bit heavy on the percussion. He likes his drums, whether it's pirates or otherwise. But you know, I think he would be a good choice. I think one thing people don't know. Quick note, Michael Giacchino is not only just a composer for Pixar, but he's also done a number of Star Wars related items, including the new Star Tours ride. He did all the music for that, which is Disney and Star Wars related. Huh?
Woo! Like
putting two and two together. All right, so folks, you can also go to StarWarsReport.com for all these great articles. That's where you can find a link to us. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, sign up for our mailing list. You'll get weekly updates of everything that's going on at the StarWarsReport.com. And that's a great way to keep up with the goings on, especially moving forward, as we've got some really special stuff coming in on the mailing list. And remember, starsreport.com/mailing list is where you can find that. One last plug, you find it on Stitcher, as I said, Stitcher Radio. It's a great, convenient app that you can download and then make it very easy to keep up with the Star Wars Report every week. All right, I think, oh, not quite everything. One last thing, email us if you have any comments or any kind of commentary on what we've talked about for this episode. You can email us, starwarsreport@gmail.com. That puts episode 70 of the Star Wars Report in the wraps. In the can, wrapped up, done, finished with, however we want to phrase it. Nathan, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure, it was a great, great discussion. And Mark, thank you again.
Oh, okay, yeah, and I'm Whistler, apparently. Yeah, it's always fun. And it's always good to have Nathan on.
Yeah, yeah, thanks, guys. And guys, definitely head over and listen to Star Wars Beyond the Films. The latest episode is all about Knight Errant. And, of course, you can also get their reactions as to the ramifications of the Disney buyout of Lucasfilm on the Expanded Universe. That's at StarWarsReport.com, and you'll find the Beyond the Films podcast. Just search for Beyond the Films in the iTunes Music Store. That's it, folks. We are done. Return each and every week, usually Thursday night, Friday morning sometime, usually, but definitely by the weekend every time our episodes go live. Stay tuned to the Star Wars Report. Your awesome roughly hour. We were gone a little bit over an hour this week, but your roughly hourly podcast about all things from that galaxy far, far away. Thanks for tuning into this episode, and we'll see you next week, guys. Husband and father with kids of his own, passes on what he has known. Heroes and villains and right versus wrong, the chronicler slowly the composer's he's hung. The artist's revision upon our mind's eye, our soul soared into the sky, our soul soared into the sky. Is wrong. The chronicler's story, the composer's key song. The artist's revision upon our mind's eye. Our soul soared into the sky. Our soul soared into the sky. Cause heroes and villains and right versus wrong. A tale told with passion to